This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit MindfulTherapyGroup.com.
1 hour remaining of my week, and then I'm just calling it quits for the rest of the week. I'll watch the Chiefs on Friday, you know. I'll do that job. Joshua Briscoe's with us. Cody Tapp. Drew Nixon with you. So we continue to talk Chiefs and whatever else we feel like for the rest of the hour. Briscoe and I are absolutely this half hour getting into Kendrick Lamar's album. If you remember, Briscoe was with us last week.
Oh, that's right. Briscoe's all in. Oh.
Yeah, it dropped in the middle of him being that's a guest on our show. I had to listen to it on my way home, and I've obviously listened to it since. There's a new update on that. Unbelievable content. I mean, I can't believe that that is the avenue that Drake would go.
I should have waited, Briscoe, because I came back yesterday with a TV off of Kendrick yelling mustard from a break one time.
I am now nervous about if I have lost some of my ability to talk about this album after the conversation we just had with Nate.
Yeah, that's fair. But at least we're trying, you know? we're allowed to have opinions on things. I had to defend the first time I brought up Kendrick Lamar on this show.
At least I'm not gold.
The very first time it came up, I had said, I think Kendrick Lamar is one of the five most talented musicians I am aware of, right? Someone was like, a musician? I'm like, are you kidding? Are you nuts? He's so good.
What you meant was that DJ Mustard is one of the top five.
Exactly. So we'll get to that in just a minute.
Great. I'll save my takes.
Because when you get into the green bean casserole, it just makes me want to turn into the appropriate meme at the moment, which is like, she's a witch, bro. I just want to yell at you instead.
I also have serious opinions about the new Wicked movie. If you want to go ahead and follow that.
Was it any good?
Yeah, it's good. I'll tell you this. Technically it's Wicked Part 1 and it's 2 hours and 40 Christian minutes long. The actual play is 2.5 hours.
Okay. So I'm not taking my daughter then.
She'd love it. I wasn't bored. 2 hours and 40 minutes. But it's nearly a 3-hour film.
So I've already made this stance clear on the air. If a movie is longer than 2.5 hours in the theater anymore, I won't be there.
You have said that.
I'll be watching it, and I am at an age with children at this point. I will in my own home watch a movie in parts.
Yeah.
I am not afraid to watch 90 minutes of Twisters and knock out the other hour later.
If it's Twisters, I think you'll keep up with the plot probably, yeah, right?
You know?
Well, hang on.
I'm not saying I've never watched a movie in full in the last year. Sure. I certainly have. But I am not afraid to start and stop a movie and get to it later.
I think that's very brave.
I think context requires. Is this 2 hours and 40 minutes of runtime, or is this the last 10 minutes or credits, and it's technically 2.5?
I believe it's a full 240. Okay. We were there through the credits also. I would say it didn't feel like it was dragging on.
Okay, that's good.
And Renee, I had not seen Wicked. I had no real relationship with the musical. But Renee said they didn't really add stuff. They didn't add any songs to bulk it out. Most of the additional things were visuals that you wouldn't be able to do on a play. In a play, so they do it in the movie.
I just think of that one song, popular, right? I mean, yeah. I think that's all I've known of Wicked. I never saw it.
That song I recognized, and Defying Gravity is the big, showstopper, whatever. I knew that from
text line claims you have to give up your man card for seeing that instead of Gladiator 2.
That's fine. You can have my man card. I'll keep my wedding ring, Texter. Thank you. Thank you for your advice.
Flex on him. Flex.
I mean, look, if I don't.
Flex.
What do you want?
Let's talk cheese for a minute, because then I'm going to get to a random question of the day. It's related to the holiday, which feels appropriate. We'll do that in about 8 minutes. I asked this question earlier, and I like other opinions on it. And I asked the text line, and it was pretty kind of universal, and I was surprised.
Okay.
Is this year's offense better than last year's offense right now? Today. Don't give me the but then Pacheco and then Hollywood and then, maybe they'll get better with DJ Humphreys. Just as it sits right now, are they better on offense than they were last year? My answer was yes. I was actually surprised to find out that a majority of the text line agreed with me. And the biggest thing I can boil it down to is efficiency. Neither team could get the ball down the field. It's relatively the same offensive line. I think they have better offensive talent who has a more defined role. And I think they are just more efficient at moving the ball from the 20 to the 20 and better in the red zone than last year's team. Significantly better? No. But, like, better enough, like, than the drop-off from the defense of what they were last year to what they are now versus what they were offensively last year to what they are now, I actually think it's closing that gap not too bad and can close it the rest of the way the rest of the season with Pacheco and Hollywood.
Do you know what happened on November 26th, this day last year?
I'll save you the trouble. I don't.
Rashee Rice went 8 for 107. It was his first real game as the Chiefs' number one option.
He finally broke out.
So with
from that point on, he was incredible.
With that in mind, it makes the question even more interesting for me because I think that I would agree that the answer is yes, that in this snapshot right now, maybe I have to draw the line before the week 12, 11th game. Well, I guess the Chiefs just played their 11th game, so maybe we need to take it after that Raiders game. We didn't know where Rice was going to go exactly, but that was a pretty good sign, right? I think I would take it right now because I think the offensive line is, of course, very, very similar, and we'll see how that ultimately shakes out. Again, I know you don't want me taking Hollywood into account, but I have to take into account what they've pivoted off of this year.
Yeah.
Kind of going back to that coaching conversation of, well, they've underperformed, but they lost their number one and number two receivers, and they've been losing their depth tight ends, and their left tackle was a disaster, and so they're adjusting there, and their backup left tackle has been banged up in his own right. So I think that with the turnover issues in the first half of this, I guess the first quarter of the season in particular, those seem to have lessened over time. And with
that's a variable stat just in the NFL, yes, typically.
It does ebb and flow, and especially when you have those high variance turnovers in a high impact spot, like in the red zone where the Chiefs were also struggling. I think we've seen them stabilize in those realms in particular in a way that makes me more optimistic. And then if you said, hey, like this game on Friday is all of a sudden magically we have waved a wand and it's for the Super Bowl, I think you'd see them with a heavier dose of DeAndre Hopkins and being able to pull some more of those levers, taking those deep shots to Xavier Worthy. So I would lean towards the yes.
Like that's the other
part.
They're
not trying enough or hard enough in my opinion, but they are trying.
A lot of times historically, the way I look at it is like, you're right. This is the exact time that Rashee Rice took off. Okay. So Xavier Worthy's not Rashee Rice, right?
No.
He's not going to just like turn into honest to God, if Rashee Rice had stayed healthy all year, I think he's probably like a 1,300-yard wide receiver,
yeah,
and we are having a very different conversation with this offense and who they are. But I also think that it's not crazy to assume that from here on out, Worthy will be better than he was the first half, because
yes,
Worthy is even 30% success rate from all the attempts they made in the first 11 weeks away from being like a 700-yard wide receiver this year, which is way better than any number two option they had last season. So if we consider Kelce a wash and Hopkins a 90% Rashee Rice from last year.
Last year's, right. Yep.
Okay. Well, then the number three option's way better. McColl is in a better place, just generally speaking.
Yep.
Like they are, and then like that's even just like, and yeah, the gap they can continue to close if Hollywood Brown comes back.
Noah Gray's in a better place.
Yeah, Noah Gray's way better, significantly better player. And so I think they're better already. I think the biggest key, because like I asked this question because as I see it, Briscoe, like relates to the Super Bowl. If you think that they were the second best, first best defense last year, now they're the 10th best defense, because that's where they rank right now. Let's just say they're the 10th best defense. Well, then you need the offense to move up 10 spots just to say relative.
Sure.
When everyone's healthy, that doesn't seem crazy to me. The only thing that stands out statistically this year that is weirder than last year is the sacks. But I think what's happening there is Mahomes decided to take those rather than turn the ball over. And I actually think it's a pretty good trade.
Yeah.
Being sacked more and being less risk and being risk adverse, that's not the worst trade-off. Getting sacked is less bad than turning it over.
Yeah, it also is, that's an interesting angle and an interesting kind of companion piece to some of the issues, especially earlier in the season, that I think they've evolved a little bit over, let's say, maybe since the Tampa game on down over the last four games, where there was clearly a relationship between the offensive line leaving Mahomes a little bit too open at times, Mahomes either dropping too far or bailing out of a pocket
early,
he shouldn't have been leaving out of, exactly,
year, yeah,
feeling some phantom pressures a little bit, and then also those every once in a while turning into turnovers. I think that a hugely important thing in this, you know, to look ahead a little bit, this is a huge question for DJ Humphries and how that relationship will work out. A hugely important thing for this offense is just, is Patrick Mahomes comfortable in the pocket right now? Like, is he comfortable back there, or is he hitting his,
that's his last step?
Absolutely. Yeah. Is he hitting his last step and then going, I bet one of my tackles is about to lose, and then he's either taking off or trying to find a gap in the offensive line that maybe he's not there, because Trey Smith's not flushing his guy out. He's a guard. He's holding him there, right? I think you can find that discomfort. And some of it was from last year. I wonder if some of the deep ball issues stem from last year. There is sort of a connective tissue between last season, the first half of this season, these last couple of games, and how they've kind of tweaked things from there.
They've looked way better in office last month.
It's been better, I think, in some part because Mahomes has been able to settle down a little bit. And I wonder if part of him settling down a little bit has been accepting that he's going to get sacked more, but he's that way he's... Look, I'm not going to drop my eyes after my second read and try to look for where to go, because I'm going to keep trying to find a place to go with the football. And if I get sacked, I get sacked. I wonder if there's a little bit of that in there too.
Like, he is only one sack away from a career high.
That's crazy.
He got sacked 28 times like 3 years ago as a career high. He has been sacked 27 times this year. He's only played 11 games. It's
wild, man.
It's weird. I mean, it's definitely surprising because it's the same offensive line essentially as last year. I know Donovan Smith to Wani, but there's not like a huge... No. Like, there's a drop off, but it's not that big of a drop off. Like, when I ask that offense question, it really kind of boils down to a simple thing. Travis Kelce and Rashee Rice, we know, are the two leading receivers. Do you know who was third on this team last year?
Third in receiving yards.
Because third on the team this year will be, we can agree, right? Travis Kelce and DeAndre Hopkins are their number one and number two options.
Yeah.
The yardage is going to be weird because DeAndre didn't come to later. The third option, we all agree, is Xavier Worthy.
Yes.
So, like, a really reliable guy who's going to finish 600-700 yards, maybe.
Did Justin Watson get third last year? I don't think he did.
Correct.
He was?
Justin Watson with 27 catches for 460 yards. I wish we could get that Justin Watson back, honestly.
Yeah.
MVS was still fourth on this team. Sky Moore, who is still technically employed, had 244 yards, whatever. So, it's just like, they're more talented. Like, they're a more talented offense. And Mahomes is, like, his numbers are starting to reflect that. But I do think that they had to, like, we just pretend like other influences don't matter. So Patrick Mahomes had to immediately deal with the fact that his number one wide receiver was now gone. Their entire season's worth of offensive game planning was gone. Do you remember how well it was working with Rashee Rice? Just as a quick reminder, they had found out a way that Rashee Rice was pretty much locked in to 8 for 100 and a tutty every single week. Like, they had the offense so figured out that that was a virtual lock every week. And then they had to go back to the drawing board. At that time, they're like, hey, is Sky Moore still any good? Drop the first like five passes they threw to him. They're like, well, that ain't going to work.
Nope.
So on to the next. Then they make the trade for DeAndre Hopkins, who's still only been on this team for 5 weeks, one of which he played after 3 days of being in Kansas City. So like a true month. So like, I still think there's growth there. There's just so much left in the offense is the way I view it.
The other thing, in the guy they may get back, they lost Hollywood Brown on the first offensive snap of the preseason.
I know. That was another part of their plan. They spent all of training camp.
This offense had an entirely different identity in training camp. Obviously, you know, Kareem Hunt ends up here because Isaiah Pacheco gets hurt, but this offense was like never... Isaiah Pacheco was not going to lead this offense the way that Kareem Hunt ended up doing for several weeks.
No, they
run
it the same way, whether it's Kareem or Pacheco.
I think they've leaned into some things that Hunt does better, and I like that they've thrown him the ball a little bit more in recent weeks. I'd like to see that continue while he continues to have his share of the workload. But that's the crazy thing. Like, remember that clip of the deep ball to I think it was the deep ball to Xavier Worthy that had Matt Nagy throwing his arms in the air and like dancing around in the highlight? This was a deep ball offense with three legitimate weapons at multiple levels of the field from the wide receiver spot alone, not including Travis Kelce or touchdown machine tight end Noah Gray. This offense felt like it could really run through Rashee Rice largely in the intermediate, have Xavier Worthy be a deep threat early on who evolves into a deep and intermediate threat as the season goes along, and Hollywood could attack all three levels of the offense or all three levels of the defense on the field. You have all those weapons all collectively creating a much easier life for Mahomes, and then you pull the rug out from underneath you.
Yeah, then just turn it all over and start over.
Now it's Xavier Worthy and Kareem Hunt. Run the offense through them.
Let's get to the random question of the day.
Random question.
For you, Josh, for you, Drew, over on the text line, 913-586-7965. You can hit us up YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, Facebook. The Fan 965. Like, subscribe, download. Briscoe's waving to you in case you don't watch it. You can see what he looks like if you're like, you know, What does he look like? He's got so like a bronze necklace.
Copper. How about copper. That? Yeah, got it in the Southwest.
Okay. I had one necklace in my entire life. Never really stuck with jewelry. Don't even wear a wedding ring.
Wow.
Never really could stick with jewelry.
Is that because you still have your man card?
I had one necklace for 1 week. And if I told you the year, I assume you guessed it was in 2002. What necklace was I wearing?
Puka shell, baby.
Correct.
Puka shell.
That is the correct answer.
I don't know what that is.
Puka shell. It's an Avenir.
Really?
Dude.
How old are you, Drew?
29.
The little white shell.
Shell surfer dude.
Oh, that's what that's called?
Puka shell necklace, baby.
I know exactly what you're. So you had the surfer vibe.
Short run. Yeah, I mean,
we all shopped
too. We all shopped at PacSun in those days.
Totally.
I'm sure.
Yeah, that's but it.
Didn't have a long run in the tap household. It lasted shortly.
Hard to pull off that lifestyle in the Midwest.
So this is my last day of the week before I take the rest of the week off for the holidays. So the question I'll ask you today is, what is your holiday tradition that has nothing to do with the holiday? So, like, what I'm saying is, I don't want, like, we build gingerbread houses every year. Like, for instance, for the last 3 years in a row, me, my wife, and my two children go to Kelly's West in Westport on Christmas Day. They're not even open to the public. The Kelly's family just invites us. So my kids, every Christmas, 3 years in a row, go play hide and seek at Kelly's in Westport.
Nice.
That's awesome. Where I pour my own beer behind the bar and have a good old time. So, like, what is your tradition that you do that is not related to the holiday, right? That's what I want to know today.
I know mine for sure. It's a little bit of a new one, but I can explain. We watch Paul Blart Mall Cop 2.
Two? What?
It's got to be the second one.
For Thanksgiving or Christmas?
Thanksgiving.
Okay.
There is I told you earlier, I texted you, I said there's a podcast I want to recommend at some point today because there's never been a better time to get in. There actually was. It was 10 years ago. There's a podcast called Till Death Do Us Blart. It includes three brothers who do a podcast I like very much, for my brother and me, and then two New Zealanders who professionally will watch one movie once a week for 52 weeks and do the podcast throughout. It's called The Worst Idea of All Time. The concept of Till Death Do Us Blart is that it's the first ever annual Eternal podcast. They have all pledged that every American Thanksgiving they will watch Paul Blart Mall Cop 2 for the rest of their natural lives and then do a podcast about their watch. Renee and I watched it a couple of days ago. We watched it one time previously as well.
Okay.
And this
so you're
year,
committing to this as well.
I don't know. I don't have to do a podcast about it, but I've enjoyed the watch along because this is year 10 for them. No hosts have died yet. When one of the hosts does eventually pass, they name their successor at the end of each episode. So there is a contingency plan here for keeping this show alive. But it's a truly remarkable thing. It's called Till Death Do Us Blart. And just go start listening to the 2015 one, I think it would have been. You can listen to these five guys just slowly psychologically unravel year over year, and the next episode ought to be out on Thanksgiving. So I watch Paul Blart Mall Cop 2.
My family also, someone mentioned playing left, right, center. We do that every Thanksgiving. That's recently too. We always gambled or did something, and my brother always brings this box now that's just like electricity on two electrodes, and we're just essentially like shocking ourselves.
I've done that at a Thanksgiving.
So that seems to occur every single year, trying to figure out what size circle we can get. Somebody says we played Monopoly on Christmas Eve, like sticking with it.
Yeah, sure.
That's interesting.
I love a board game.
Drew, do you guys have one?
I'm trying to think of one, and a lot of our stuff is centered.
Yeah, like decorating an ornament or making a gingerbread house.
I know. Well, like for Christmas, we always open one present on Christmas Eve. Still has to do with Christmas, but we always do one present on, I guess, we always have pizza on Christmas Eve. That's one. There we go. That's every single Christmas Eve, we always order a pizza. Could be from a different place. Could be made, I guess. We don't make...
But pizza's the food.
The food every Christmas Eve.
It took us a little while. It was an adjustment maybe like 5 or 6 years ago in my in-laws' family. So my mother-in-law and my wife and like there's like 10 of them. Christmas Eve, when we get together, is she makes enchiladas.
Ooh.
And I go pick up chicken from El Pollo Rey and tamales. So like...
God, that sounds good.
So she makes enchiladas and then we go pick up tamales from San Antonio Market and then across the street get chicken from El Pollo Rey. So that is for the last 4 years, I don't know, 5 years, that's been the Christmas Eve fare.
Have you considered how much better it would taste if you ate it while watching Paul Blart Mall Cop 2?
I had not considered it yet. But like you know what? This is where like people probably underappreciate like the podcast space. If you want to do something truly unique,
yep,
that isn't just like, because like we can all do, like anybody can fire up a cheese podcast and we all do, and do those things. There's a podcast that I watched a full episode of because I was fascinated by the concept called Talking Talktua. So you're familiar
yes,
with like...
I've seen the clips.
Okay, so Talktua, we all familiar with the girl, right? She has her own podcast. The Hawktua girl has a podcast called Talktua.
Yep.
This, I've never seen a single episode of that podcast, but the Talktua podcast. I have seen an episode of a, a podcast called Talking Talktua, in which two gentlemen sip wine and eat cheese and crackers and have like a genuinely studious conversation using graduate level words. They're drinking like strawberry lemonade out of wine glasses, breaking down the events of her podcast as if it's a thing.
Incredibly serious.
It's like a turducken. Yeah, they're doing it like they're doing it in a way in which they're like trying to evaluate it on its very serious merits or the situations in which they're in as if they're serious situations. I can appreciate the like absolute absurdity that it's like.
I think Talking Dead, we did that for Walking Dead, a lot of Game of Thrones podcasts. Think about it like that. It's like a show recap show, but for the Talktua podcast featuring the Hawktua girl.
All right, here's over on the text line some more answers. We watch Monty Python and the Holy Grail every Christmas. Okay. I maybe need to adopt this one from 816. We do a big Mario Kart tournament on Christmas.
Ooh.
Yeah,
I think
that.
Like, but if we do that, I want cashier prizes. Like, I want this to become a cutthroat tradition.
Not
does that make
rights?
Sense? No, I no. want. I want like.
You got
I
like
want,
a gold I, Santa hat or something like, that's yeah, yours the rest of the yeah. year.
I want
nice.
To.
That would be cool.
I want it to end in like trash talking an 8-year old as you're hitting them with a red shell crossing the finish line level cutthroat. Because if we're doing it, I want it to mean something, right? I want, like you said, I want to be able to lord it over everyone for the whole year.
Yes.
That this is what I've accomplished.
You wear this gold Santa hat to every family gathering. I like this one.
Like it's the Lombardi trophy or something
yes.
you're just bringing around?
Oh, you're on it. You're on a championship parade the rest of the year. I like this one here. Have the annual passive aggressive convo with my dad about why I don't have kids yet.
That's an annual tradition. How many years in a row have
that's
you been
a,
working
that's
on that?
That's a good question.
Six? That is a pretty good one. That's a really good one.
A lot of movies, like they watch the first Die Hard, after all the presents are under the tree on Christmas Eve. Somebody said that they watch The Sound of Music every Christmas. Not a Christmas movie, obviously.
No, but in a weird way,
it's a tradition.
It feels like it's like anything that's like people like singing in the hills just kind of feels like Christmassy.
It's the spirit of Christmas.
Yeah, that's, I don't know what it
from
is.
From the 816, Cody, you'll appreciate this as well as... anybody who plays LCR, play left, right, center for big money. Interfamily relationships have been scarred.
Yeah.
As a result. You're saying that would be the Mario Kart tournament as well, where you're yelling at a little kid because you beat him in Mario Kart.
Person says the Mario Kart tournament, first place is $100, second is $50. Like, I'm not kidding. If we did that, right? And it always had to be the newest version of Mario Kart.
Oh.
Because, like, if it was Mario Kart 64, I'm going to destroy all the kids, right?
You got the reps.
They got no hope, right? There's two or three of us it would be in competition for. I mean, it'd be a tight race for first, but like, I would also make a point of like the month in the lead up. I can't tell you, like, Mario Kart would become a regular thing in my life.
Yeah.
For the entire month of November leading up to Christmas, I'd be getting the Nintendo 64 controller. I'd be getting reps in before. There'd be some people that have no chance because they wouldn't commit the way I would commit.
That's right.
That's what I'm
saying. Are you a manual or automatic?
Well, Mario Kart.
Yeah.
Oh, I've tried to do the manual in Mario Kart. I think I was a manual for a while on the Wii because I felt like there was a significant speed difference.
That's exactly the same.
But I've never adopted it on the Switch. I never felt like it was as beneficial to me as it was in the Wii.
Yeah. I think that's the right call. I need to revisit the Switch version 8, I suppose.
I will say right now, if we're playing Mario Kart 64 in a tournament and you don't jump around the turns, you're getting cooked.
Yep.
It's over
just how it
for
is.
You. If you're thinking, wait, jump around the turns, it's over. It's too late. You can't win the matchup.
I saw another text tradition here. We sit around and take our blood sugar and give a prize to the lowest. Texter, invite me. I would love to come.
This
to
is rigged.
I could definitely
diabetes
rig this
gives
for
you
myself.
A definitive advantage.
Huge advantage. I hope my prize is a shot of glucagon, but I could win. My prize may need to be a regular Mountain Dew, but I can beat you.
Someone might have to hit him with like with extra medicine at some point.
Yeah,
but he'll be okay.
I'll need you to pour granular sugar in my mouth, but I'll get there.
Oh, see, I would implement this Mario Kart thing for Thanksgiving this year, but the Chiefs game's on at the same time my family's getting together this year.
We're already going to have a competitive event that ruins the day for us. We don't need anything else.
You
dang.
Don't need to add to it.
Briscoe's calling a Steelers win then? Is that what you're saying?
How many times have they beaten the Bengals so far?
Too many.
Okay. I'm afraid of them. I'm afraid of them in a real way, Drew.
From the 816, I would destroy Cody in any Mario Kart. Any?
Yeah, I'll set up the parking lot right now.
I will say,
same thing. The N64 applies. I can take the same shortcuts you can, but I'm saying we're not doing that. You got to still run the race.
Oh, okay.
You got to run the race. We're not in Wario Stadium jumping over the third hill.
I kind of like Wario Stadium.
I understand, but like I'm just saying from a clean rate, you can use a lightning bolt and zap them down the hill.
The Steelers haven't played the Bengals yet this season. Those games are both still coming.
Yeah, the Steelers haven't played anybody in their division, right?
They've played two teams, the Steelers have. Ravens.
As of like 2 weeks ago, they played zero. It's like 2 weeks in a row. All right, that's my random question today. We get back, we'll talk some more Chiefs. I don't know, have a little bit more fun. We got 30 minutes left in the show next. More Kendrick Lamar coming back from break. Cody Goldie, 96.5.
I don't know how much more of this he can play. We got to start talking. We can't just leave the bump music to breathe a little bit. No.
Clean version is here. I have.
Okay. Phew. I was a little worried we were going to get in trouble.
No,
the Chiefs, by the way, as of 12 seconds ago, officially announced they've signed DJ Humphries. I thought we all knew that, but that's fine.
They signed who?
Is that not his name?
DJ Humphries!
So he's a, whatever. It's fine. He's a Chief. I don't think he'll start this Friday.
Nah.
I think we get more of an answer on that from Andy Reid tomorrow, so I guess stay tuned for that. We'll at least get a sense on this. From the 303, Kendrick needs to do a collab with DJ Mustard. Cody does. I don't think he'll do one.
Oh, with you?
We tried desperately. I can't imagine. I've never tried. There were two times. I've been to Super Bowl Radio Row 8 times. A ton. More times than I've been to a Super Bowl. But I've been to Radio Row 8 times.
Yeah.
There are two times that I really, really, really wanted a guest on the show. I did not get either. One was Martha Stewart.
Oh.
Tried. Really tried. And this was maybe even before the Matt, really tried.
Taylor's Martha Stewart thing?
Mm-mm.
Don't worry about it.
Okay. I'll find out later. So desperately tried to get
Martha Stewart. A loaded story.
And then last year, I was trying to get Little Dicky on the show so we could get one quick bar that I could work into a song.
I was denied four times. I tried. I was denied four times.
You tried.
We really tried.
I
didn't even get to talk to him.
What was he promoting? Because I feel like he promotes his own things and contraceptives are the two things I've seen him promote.
Well, was he doing a comedy? His show, but I don't think it was a show. I think he was actually, it wasn't like his TV show. I think he was actually performing or doing something.
Point is, we couldn't get him.
Yeah, couldn't.
So,
is Lil Dicky too big for you guys? What's going on?
I guess.
Well, they asked why we wanted him, and I was like, well, we want him to.
He considers himself a musician, just wasn't getting anywhere.
Yeah, we want to have him spit some bars.
He's an Eagles fan. Is that anything?
I mean, playing the Eagles all the time. Feels like there's something there.
Okay, all right. Why do you want him on? Well, why is he here?
the more valid
question.
What do you care
I want him on? Why is that important?
Yeah, what are you trying to filter out? Are you trying to filter out specifically people who may ask for one line of dialogue from Lil Dicky to maybe go in a song later in honor of some Royals player?
Someone said, I did also try to get Bill Romanowski. I threatened to fight him. I told him, actually, that's not it. I told him.
I would hope that's not it.
I said.
Yes, you did.
I don't understand the fight. I told him I was going to call him a coward to his face.
And
a coward?
You did that?
And I no-showed us. He's supposed to show up in Radio Row.
No,
he's the coward.
We actually got a response from him that he would be on the show. But then when we tried, he wasn't actually there.
Oh, that's right. I said I was going to call him a crybaby to his face.
That's what it was.
Do you think that he knew that and bailed, or he just bailed and happened to avoid that?
Hard to say. CTE can get the better of a lot of people, and I'm assuming that that's affecting Bill Romanowski's health as well. Can the Chiefs, legitimate question here, the Chiefs lost a couple more people to injury today.
Yeah.
Small ones, right? But now they're on their third kicker because Schrader's heading to, he's not in the IRR, but he didn't practice today and it's Tuesday and the game's on Friday and they signed Matthew Wright to the practice squad. So clearly he's going to be an elevation on Friday and kick for them. And they just lost another tight end. Peyton Hendershot is heading to the injured reserve list. So now he'll be done. That is the third tight end they have lost this year. Legitimate question. Can the Chiefs afford to take on even one more ounce of water in the injury department before this levee breaks? I don't know that you can take on much more. They've lost two wide receivers for what has been the entire season, a third for at least 5 weeks in Juju Smith-Schuster. They're now on their third kicker, their ninth tight end. They're on their third left tackle for the season, by the way, by the time DJ Humphreys. Now, that one's not injury related, although isn't, because Nate Taylor is saying Wanya Morris pretty much can't walk.
Yeah.
So they need the additional help there as well. So, like, I feel like they're at the theoretical limit of injuries. Like, one more might break this machine.
It's kind of, I'm not trying to like pick anybody to get hurt here to sacrifice or whatever, but it is kind of funny that the only position where I think they might have just more depth than snaps right now might be defensive end, a group that has not been good enough, frankly.
They really
so like
can, yeah.
Testing that is sort of bizarre because again, they waive Cam Thomas
but
today.
But they had Mike Dana out for essentially
and they miss him for a while, right?
Weeks, yeah.
And Cam Thomas was active for, I think, six snaps while during the Dana outage. And Aminihou's on his way back. But no, I mean, they have been ravaged by injuries in a way that kind of to the point of what we were talking about earlier that you and Nate were kind of covering in some of the interconnected issues. It's not just like losing your number two corner that would hurt any team. You lose your number two corner at a time when your pass rush is seeming to take a little bit of a step backwards from where it was last year. You lose not just your number one wide receiver, but your number one wide receiver after already losing your number two wide receiver, making your new number one-ish wide receiver a rookie who just got here, and then a veteran,
or
Hall of
Juju,
Famer, who just
a guy
got
who you
here.
Signed on like August 15th.
Or Juju, who then misses those four or five games or whatever it was. So there has just been this domino effect, and to me, that's why in kind of like the coaching conversation that we've been having, I mentioned this doing the little grade thing last night, and we've been talking about coach of the year and all of that. I have to grade the entire coaching staff on a curve. I still think there's a couple levers they could pull. The deep ball in particular seems like the thing that's there for the picking. But you give me this entire resume of all the guys the Chiefs have lost this year. The fact that they're 10-1 is honestly impressive.
Yeah, it's like, I just, at some point, though, like, it's like anything else. I think there's just a certain amount before it's like, it shows.
Yeah.
And, like, for whatever reason, it has not impacted the win-loss yet. But, like, it will. One more injury, and it's like, okay, maybe it's a 14-win team. And then you need the Bills to lose two games in order to get the one seed. Versus if you're a two-loss team, you only need them to lose one. And that one is fairly obvious when they've got the Lions on the schedule on the road. You're like, okay, I can pick out a loss. And I know that the Patriots, Jets, Patriots in the season doesn't look daunting. But the NFL last week cannot teach you that divisional games are different.
Yep.
That those can be losses even when they should be wins all the time. Division every year in division games, it is the same damn story. It's not like new or interesting information. It is just like a fact of living life in the NFL. The division games are different. So maybe another one there, but you don't want to count on the Bills having to lose two. You want to count on you only having to lose one the rest of the way. This one should be a win on Friday because I don't think you have any excuse to have back-to-back bad games against terrible opponents. Like Ryan Fitzpatrick actually kind of nipped that in the bud. He is a former NFL player, so I should probably heed his advice a little bit. But I think there's a part of, like, it is more deeply, like, one game against a bad opponent in a season where you're already just kind of a one-score team, especially when, I'll always point out, and I put this out yesterday, I think it's an important note of that Panthers game. The Panthers never held the ball with a chance to win the game, ever.
Mm-hmm.
In four quarters, they never possessed the ball with a chance to take the lead. In four quarters, never had a chance to actually lead the football game. They could have tied it, but never had a chance to lead the football game. There is no reason for me for you to no-show against a terrible top five in the NFL draft picking opponent 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
They just lost their starting quarterback on Sunday, and they were already terrible.
Does it...
The division game gets me.
Does it? No, I mean, understandably, does it extend to a nail biter against the Broncos, like a decent football team with a quarterback who like was sort of figuring it out, and the Chiefs putting up 16 there, maybe? I agree that the consistent struggles against bad teams, I think, rightfully makes you doubt what exactly you're getting from the theoretical good teams when that happens over and over and over again. The Chiefs just always in this zone, it feels like, where I'm looking at the scoreboard behind you and I'm just seeing one score game, one score game, one score game. That's a one score game.
There were a couple of two score games in a row.
13-point win over the Saints and then 10 points over the Niners after the bye week. Hallelujah. This team suddenly learned how to blow teams out again.
Two, but they lost.
It's crazy, man. It really is remarkable that they're always there. I think that can coincide with like the injury conversation where with a couple of incredibly important exceptions, like Patrick Mahomes, the Chiefs are not significantly more talented than most of the teams they're playing right now, even lesser teams.
No, but they're better coached than they have Patrick Mahomes.
Enough to have you win those games. But I think that's why there's not these blowout performances, because there's not a huge talent disparity between the best edge rusher on Friday on the field is going to be Max Crosby. You know what? Like, you're going to be able to do that on multiple levels. I think the Raiders are in a point now where Jadeveon Clowney might have been on Sunday, or at least him and Chris Jones, in that. Certainly, he's the best edge rusher, definitely.
Pass rusher would be Chris Jones,
and then I wonder how many Panthers in a row you might have. You take Mahomes 1-1, Chris Jones next. Maybe you draft Travis Kelce third.
So guess what happened with George Karlaftis then? Like what? Like, because again, he was a 10.5 sack player last year. He was surrounded by the exact same talent.
Yep.
This is an indictment on only, like, the pass rush deficiencies feel like an indictment on two players. One, and I'll point this out, because they're going to be like, well, George Karlaftis has more sacks than Chris Jones. I have eyes.
Yeah. Yes.
Chris Jones still ranks top 10 in the NFL in pressures, and he's double teamed on every play. So
this is not a Chris Jones problem.
I don't think so. So what happened to George Karlaftis? And then I think Felix Anudike-Uzomah not developing into a medium level NFL pass rusher, like a 5-7 sack guy.
And then a guy they traded for at the beginning of the season to try to bolster that group, they cut today in Cam Thomas.
Yeah. I don't even remember what they gave up for that.
A sixth, I think. It might have been a seventh. I think they were going to lose that Hendershot pick too, for what it's worth. But to your question about what happened to George Karlaftis, I think two things happened. It is the same talent on the defensive line, but it's not the same talent on the defense. When you look at the way that George Karlaftis wins reps, it is typically with strength and endurance and consistency and closing and folding in his wing of the pocket. When you don't have anywhere to go with the football, you have more time to double team Chris Jones while Karlaftis and Dana start to do the trash compactor thing. Right now, what George Karlaftis doesn't have behind him is L'Jarius Sneed. And so when you have a pass defense in the secondary that is much more exploitable now than it was at this time last year, I think you see that clock speed up for this defensive line. And Chris Jones is the only guy on this D-line, other than occasionally Tershawn Wharton, who can win fast. I'm getting choked up just thinking about it.
Well, George Karlaftis, in your defense, George Karlaftis has always been a high motor guy.
Always. Yeah, that's his game. And then also you have opposing tackles now who have a year of high-level production on film from George Karlaftis. He doesn't have a real varied pass rush. He doesn't have a whole lot of moves that he can consistently be throwing at tackles. So I think if you're prepared for a power and effort game, don't let him get around you. That's not really his game anyway. And then give your quarterback a slow death to work with. And by that point, Nazi Johnson or Shamari Connor's guy is probably open.
I did make once in his rookie year an unaired song for George Karlaftis. He was it was to AJR's World's Smallest Violin.
Okay, I know AJR a little bit, but
it's I'm sure you've heard World's, that song.
Probably. I don't know if I know the
maybe
title
Drew can play like a short clip of it. I believe there are some curse words in it. So
an AJR song. AJR got edgy.
I would look for the clean version.
What is this again?
The World's Smallest Violin. Because it was the Chiefs' best defensive end.
Why didn't that air? That felt forced.
Honest to God, what happened was I made the whole song about how he was going to get his first NFL sack real soon because he had a half sack. And so it was making this whole thing about like how I thought he was playing better than he was, and then he got the sack, and I was like, well, I can't air it now. It's just kind of useless.
Okay, all right. So, interesting.
Like, but I mentioned high motor guy even in that song.
Yes. Water polo, baby. He's got a motor that lasts forever.
My defensive end played at Purdue. He was a high motor dude. Like,
I do now know that song now.
You know what
now
I'm
that
hearing?
You've said that, I'm like,
can
okay,
I hear just a short clip
I have
of
the
it?
Instrument.
Yeah. Defensive end played at Purdue. He was a high motor dude. Man. And then blow your quarterback to smithereens later, I believe, became a line.
I'm reading the lyrics to make sure there's not a cuss
so violent. Coming up. I made sure to look at the clean version again. So
yeah, all good.
That's so insane. Job, so. Oh my God. He's so insane. Yep. Next to him, these plays don't look so, you know, like whatever it was.
Where does that rank for you personally in your best performances?
Honestly, in retrospect, that song was good enough to air, but it didn't make it. It's like, it's middle of the road one. Someone's asked me that before, my personal ranking system.
Yeah.
And I think what the general consensus is, Pasquantino deserves to be somewhere right near the top.
Yeah, it's probably one. It's hard for Pasquantino to not be the first pick here for me, but I'm trying to remember.
I think it is that.
I think it almost has to be, right?
Mikel was very good.
Mikel was very popular, and that was in a run when I was hitting some pretty good Royal songs there for a while. You know what, honest to God? I thought underrated because it flew under the radar because he only had 10 days up and then he got kicked out. Was I made a song for Nelson Velasquez this last year. It's like the only Royal song that didn't work. And I thought my song choice, I think this deserves to be in my top five, and it's never going to get remembered because of the player that it was for. Because nobody expected this song.
I'm trying to figure out why it's the song.
I'm begging, begging you where does to it? Hit the baseball hard out in LA. I'm begging, begging.
Where's the pun going to be?
So he's just throwing home run. What's important here is the fast part when I eventually, this is, I get proud of myself when I actually hit the hard part.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Fast and had everything. It flew away.
Wait for the next part. This is when I think it gets better.
This is still pretty good.
So far.
Going, slumps will end, but anytime I sing, you get your flow. Yeah, anytime I sing, your hits will grow. Yeah, anytime I sing, you earn that dough. But I plan and see, just let me go. And I'm on my knees and I'm begging.
I thought that, you know, like I hit that part.
That's
you great.
Were in your pocket. Yeah.
You know?
You were in your bag.
When you get the difficult part, that's where I feel like you're like, okay, I hit it. That's why the Pasquantino one works. I sung in Spanish for that.
Yeah, that's huge.
Like,
respect in that fact.
I rewrote an entire part of that song in Spanish.
That's excellent.
And it might actually be the better part of my singing in that song, the Pasquantino part. The general consensus on that one always is like, why does his voice sound better in Spanish? I'm like, I don't know. Maybe it's just a register different.
I think so. Everything sounds a little better in Spanish, right? Like, I think that makes a little bit of sense.
Just a better language.
You're just probably a man of many talents, Cody.
You know? That's all. It's way up. I thought that one got underappreciated at the time.
What's the chorus of Velasquez?
What
was the pun in the, why did you
begging,
end up
I
on,
was begging him to hit home runs.
Okay, so it was just simply
was
begging
him
to
about
hit
him
more
hit
home
runs.
Okay, got it.
So
you should have sang it more based off the lyrics there if that was what you needed.
And fairness, he did play for the next, my whole theory was always like it's 10 to 14. I can't remember the exact number, but like my song works for the previous 2 weeks when you were terrible. And then the 2 weeks after that, you're going to be a lot better. He was a lot better after that. And then he was never on the roster ever again.
Well, man,
never on the roster.
Did you ever try to get a hold of anybody in the organization to be like, guys, you wasted.
You know, I really worked hard on that song.
I can tell you there was another comeback coming. You cut the experiment too short.
You know, there's a limitation with some players like that, which, you know, you're just going to be kind of hamstrung.
Yeah.
Nothing you can do about it, you know, one way or the other. But I still felt pretty good about it.
I still think
Pasquantino's probably my single biggest hit. By the way, real quick, your opinion changed on either of the teams last night?
Maybe a smidge. I was doing the show here, and so by the time I got home,
kind of neutral.
The Ravens were basically ending it. It felt like by the time I ended up getting home, I guess the Chargers scored again. But no, I think they're both two pretty good teams who the Chiefs should not lose to this season. But I mean, obviously they played the Ravens already once, and I think the Chargers and Broncos getting better as the season goes on is kind of fun. But I can't say that I'm deeply, deeply afraid of either of them in 2024. I think the Chargers, little Harbaugh Herbie thing. That might work out.
Real quick, to play us out, Drew, here's the song that the text line says was their favorite. I made it for a bar in Waldo.
Let me talk to you. Let me talk to you. To your brain. Let me talk to you. They got them battered onion rings. Drinks perfect pour.
That'll close us out today, Briscoe. Thanks for coming in.
Next thing you know, it's been a blast.
We'll see you all tomorrow. The Drive coming up next.